In the late 70s, radio stations were in revolt, declaring disco music dead, culminating in the notorious Disco Demolition Night at Comiskey Park, a promotional event that backfired into a full-on riot. Disco sucks became the battle cry against the decadence of the club scene, its association with gay culture, and because disco music was overexposed. People got sick of the disco beat in bubblegum ads and celebrity vanity records. Even the gay robots from Star Wars had a disco album.
Out of the ashes of disco's demise, DJs in Chicago developed a new sound for a new generation, which became known as house music. This new style became a hit in clubs catering to Black, Latino, and gay folks, and is now what most electronic music is based on. Today we're talking to one of the pioneering DJs of house music, Ralphie Rosario. Recently, the city of Chicago named a street after his DJ group, the Hot Mix 5, for their contribution to the international house music scene.
Join us as Ralphie Rosario gives us some amazing stories in remixing songs for all the divas, Cher, Madonna, Donna Summer, and even, and I am telling you, Jennifer Holliday.
Are celebrity DJs ruining everything?
Wedding DJs.
And the role of drugs in dance music.
I'm DJ Fausto Fernos.
I'm DJ Mark Fillion.
And you're listening to the hot sound of Feast of Fun. Today's show is brought to you by generous support of fabulous listeners like you.
We really can't do the show without your support, so please visit our website, feastoffun.com, and make a donation. Buy a t-shirt.
Your financial support makes all the difference.
Thank you.
Since the 1970s, DJ Ralphie Rosario has been serving up delicious grooves and fabulous beats. He's one of the people that helped define the sound of house music, the sound of a generation. He's worked with Madonna, Cher, Britney Spears. You've worked with Britney Spears? I don't think so. I got that wrong here.
No, yeah, probably.
Many divas, including the Pet Shop Boys, and recently the city of Chicago named a street, the Hot Mix 5, after him and his associates for defining the sound of a generation. And he's here on the Feast of Fun today. Welcome, Ralphie Rosario.
Hello.
So, I mean, did it make you cry to have the city of Chicago name a street after you?
No. You know what? It was something that I was actually thinking about because we were supposed to do a Hot Mix 5 reunion.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we did it 2 years ago, and the radio station, V103, wanted to do this thing, and Armando Rivera was basically behind this. He was one of the DJs on the radio, and he said he wanted to do this Hot Mix 5 reunion at a House of Blues, and they were very interested in bringing us in. So was myself, Kenny Jason, Scott Sills, Mickey Oliver, and Farley Jack Master Funk, the original five Hot Mix 5 guys.
And I'm sure I can imagine that there was a lot of DJs who were like, I can't believe they didn't ask me to be part of this celebration.
Well, you know, it could have been, especially all the spinoffs that we had given way to that time.
Let's talk about Hot Mix 5 and why the city of Chicago named a street after it.
Yeah.
It was a group of you and four other DJs who used to spin on Saturday nights on a local station.
Right.
And what kind of music were you playing?
It was basically classified. I mean, it was Italo disco house/house music. And it basically was the very early signs of electronic music in terms of it reaching the clubs after disco had died. And that's where we picked up, and that's when the show became successful.
And you did this at what age? Because I was like, well, if he was on the radio in 1981...
He was trying to figure out if I was 60 or something. No, sorry.
And you're not, but you started it like at... You were DJing in grade school.
I basically started off in 1979. I was playing disco records at when we were sitting. And you're talking about weddings and stuff.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I used to be a wedding DJ too.
Yeah, I was the relief for my brother's band. They had a salsa band, they had weddings, and they needed a DJ to play between their rest sets, and there I was.
So back in 1979, the act of DJing involved you bringing records and spinning them and crossfading one song to another to give the people at the party the feeling that the music didn't ever stop.
Right. It's basically a web of sound is what it was classified as. It was a web of sound that would just keep going. It was interweaved. All the songs actually connected in some way or form.
And the nice thing about disco music is that a lot of it had the same, very consistent sounds and beats that allowed people to mix and crossfade.
Exactly.
And when the, well, I guess, what was the name of the DJ? I'm blanking out on his name, who declared disco to be dead.
Oh, Steve Dahl.
Steve Dahl at Soldier Field in this publicity stunt that backfired for him.
Right.
And, but it certainly, you know, the public this declared disco music was dead, and out of those ashes, you and the Hot Mix 5 and a lot of other DJs around the country
especially,
decided to create the sound and this interesting type of music called house music. What exactly made you think that you could get away with this back then?
Well, it was it wasn't a point of, oh my God, he did that, I have to think of something else. No, it was more like it just took a different form. Disco was so commercial and so commercialized before you knew it. Remember, Ethel Merman had a disco album.
She everybody did. Star Wars had a disco with Mecco.
Right.
I like that.
Did you
stuff,
guys
though.
Know that there was an actual disco museum in New York? It was set up for a little while.
Really?
Disco Stu.
Yeah,
approved.
They were showing commercials like Wrigley chewing gum commercials gone disco, all kinds of you know, normal things that we would need, like cleaning products and all kinds of stuff, doing commercials, and they had disco playing in their commercials. That's when you know that it was totally overdone and totally oversaturated.
Is that really what killed it then? It was the
I think it was
Steve
the oversaturation of stuff. I think that's exactly what it was. It was just overkill.
So it became a situation where you had any terrible song and you threw a disco beat on top of it, like I kind of like that idea.
Well, you know, it's happening now all over again think about it. What all this you mentioned earlier about that robotic share kind of like vocal, and anybody and everybody can sing now because of it, you see.
Well, you were there,
it's gonna be
involved.
Overkill.
You're sort of like personally responsible for that share vocal. You're not gonna take that credit.
I go back in the day where I used to record the tape and there was no such thing. You can sing or you couldn't. You're in or you're out.
So well, let's go
back to your Hot Mix 5, because it was a great honor for you guys to get a street named after you.
Right.
So when did you guys first know that you were onto something? When were you like, wow, this is really taking off? And when did you guys even come up with the name House?
Well, the responses during the radio show were crazy. I mean, I was 14 years old. I was graduating from eighth grade, going on to becoming a freshman in high school, and this was a hobby that I had on the side for myself. And since I was consistent in doing these mixes every week, I basically turned in these tapes every week, and I used to belong to a record pool, and the record pool guy, the director, the president of the pool, was basically one of these guys that was tied to the radio station, WBMX. His name was Don St. James.
And they put you to work.
And you know what? He said, I need some mixtapes. Anybody here at the pool would like to donate or put some in for the radio show? If they like it, they'll play it. And they started playing mine quite a bit.
But let's to give the listeners sort of an idea of what you were doing differently is that you guys weren't not just taking songs and crossfading them or trying to sync them up. You were slicing and deconstructing songs and even finding generic drum patterns and overlaying them to create a whole new song.
No, not really. That was later on. A lot of that was later on when we started really experimenting with becoming producers in the electronic music kind of thing that was so new to us, you know?
Because the technology made it possible.
It became easier.
And so you could do it.
Right.
What was that technology like? Like, were you guys using samplers?
Yes, samplers.
And
there was
sequencers?
Sequencers, keyboards, drum machines, things like that. And more companies are putting these things together. They've always been around, but nobody's actually used them for the way that we were kind of manipulating them.
What made you think and to arrange and manipulate the music in this way? Like, what did somebody just wake up one day and say, you know, instead of doing you went
no.
it
wasn't anything like that. It was more like, how can we express ourselves besides what we're playing as DJs? That's what it was. We have something here. Everybody has their own. Every DJ or producer that was back in the day had a feeling about how to put their stuff together. What could I do? How do I get to express myself besides being in front of a crowd every week playing records? What else can I do to enhance my experience? And that's what that is for me even now.
But what do you think that that type of music caught on so well into the point? Because I always heard house music. I always think of like salad dressing.
Well, you know, well, the house because dressing. You know what it was, yeah. Is that all that music was basically kept in the clubs. And the only way you could hear most of that was inside the clubs. The radio wasn't playing any of that stuff. The radio wasn't really playing a lot of the, except for the R&B stations back in the day in 79, 78, were playing groups like First Choice and all these South Soul Records based artists and stuff. And here we were playing these in the clubs and these long versions in the clubs. And when we bought it to radio, we bought the show to radio, they were like, the response was crazy because people loved to hear this music.
And from then on, you launched a very successful music production career where you worked with some of the biggest names popular music.
Which I would never have imagined in a million years that I would be here telling you about this right now.
So you made a house remix of Jennifer Holliday's And I'm Telling You.
And I'm telling you, she re-recorded it.
She came to your studio.
She came to our studio, she re-recorded it.
Now, was it Big Jennifer or Skinny Jennifer?
It was Skinny Jennifer.
And so, when she came in, I think because of all songs that exist in the, you know, gay anthems. Right. And I'm Telling You probably is the, if you're a drag queen, it's the song you need to learn how to lip sync.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's like,
we even did it as pandas.
Yeah. And I think what is it about that song that to you feels that it's such an icon to the point that it exists so powerfully outside of that musical Dream Girls?
I wish I knew. I don't know.
Is it Jennifer Holliday's bringing in these
growls? It's her performance.
And the ha ha!
It's just her performance. You know? It's her performance.
It's her performance
if
of the
you
song.
If you saw that original performance when she was heavy, they play that clip at Sidetrack.
Mm-hmm. All the time.
Yeah. If you saw that performance, I mean, it was everything.
Because I've seen her perform in front of a pretty small group of people, and she came out and she's like, I'd like to sing some songs from my new album. Mm-hmm. And the audience was like, no. Sing And I'm Telling, like, literally, like, really rude, screaming at, like, the distance you and I are sitting right now, to her face, like, And I'm Telling You, sing that song. Well, and she's, like, trying to be like,
isn't that messed up how the people get stuck on something and they just do not want to let it go?
But when she came out and she did that song, she breathed in. She collected herself, and out came the monster,
right?
Tigress, lioness of the jungle.
I experienced that firsthand in the recording studio with a piece of glass between me and her, and the lights were dim where she was singing. I couldn't believe what was coming out of this little woman.
Wow.
Why?
How many takes did it take? What was the process?
Two.
She sang that song in two takes.
Two takes. The first one, she warmed up, and she says, I'm ready to go. We recorded it, and it was done. And then I had to tell her that we wanted an ad lib track. So she just basically had to croon over the instrumental. So I had extra parts, and she was a champion. She went and she did it.
Can you imitate a little bit of what she did? It's just like, hey.
Well, she sang it.
No.
Well, she sang that song thousands of times.
Well,
at that
of course,
point in
she
time,
sang
right?
it in front of the President Clinton. At the White House. It was a command
Jennifer Holliday did.
Jennifer Holliday did. Wow. And when I saw that, I was like, that's really when it really like struck me. What a powerful and unique performance. And I think it even outshines her. You know what I'm saying? It's something that, you know, I don't believe in religion or God or anything, but this is something that is bigger than her.
Mm-hmm.
And so for you to be entrusted with the song, when you started, okay, so you recorded her vocals. What was the next step for you as a music engineer?
Well, I first of all, just having her around, I wasn't really intimidated that, you know. I don't get intimidated by them. I mean, they're artists.
Because if you beat them hard enough, they're just whatever
they'll
you
back
want.
Down.
But
yeah.
you should see how many people in that studio were certain. They were so nervous. It was like walking on eggshells. You know, she needed to have a specific mic, and then they didn't have it, and they gave her something close to it, and she was fine with it, but it's very, very weird when you're dealing with divas like that. You know, it's either it can turn on you sometimes.
Mm. So I mean, did you lay down the drum or the
bass
line?
Okay, so basically
or?
What it was is this is how it all started. She basically had an instrumental track that she always sang to. And I clocked the instrumental track, and it came in at, I think, at 117, 118 BPM. that was close enough for me because I needed to take her to 125 for our market, pretty
much. So you sped her up.
Yeah.
And she sounded like a chipmunk.
No. Time stretcher. No, right? A lot of that, that's too much of that going on. No, but the thing is about it is that she's so, it's so rich that I was very careful not to let that happen. So there was no, there was no auto-tuning plug-in on her at all. There's been nothing. What you hear is her. And so I bought that to my place, and I was working on it. I time-stretched it and programmed all the music around for the dance version. It came out great.
And then you also worked with Cher.
Yes.
And so you worked on, what was the track that
it
you...
It was called Different Kind of Love Song.
A different kind of love song.
Different one.
And that was a part of the album that Cher released that. I think that song, Believe, really changed people's perception of auto-tuning and made that acceptable, even though Kesha says that her music isn't auto-tuned, which is kind of crazy. If you... for somebody who's so well known for auto-tuning. And what was kind of happening at that time? Like, what was the kind of discussion where people heard Believe and
well, you know, it's that auto-tune plugin had existed way before Cher bought it out the way she did it. I guess it was some kind of weird twangy thing with her voice that made it so successful. And whoever had produced it manipulated it the right way. There were some areas, if you listen to it close enough, there's some areas that she's not on auto-tune at all. And then some areas that she is, especially in the chorus. So bringing these things, that kind of electricity into a normal vocal performance is acceptable for me. I think it's great. But overkill, because now everybody feels like, because they can't sing, they can do it.
Well, I have the T-Pain iPhone app on my iPhone. We could create a little song right now.
Oh, see, I'm sure. See, I mean, I wouldn't doubt it if maybe some of these artists, these companies start endorsing these artists for these auto-tune plugins because it's just ridiculous. There's just too much of it out there.
Do a lot of people like come up to you and they're like, hey!
Oh, God, no.
Okay,
no,
will you put that into a hit, Ralphie,
please?
I
never, ever gave them the chance to do that.
I'll do it right now for you.
As a matter of fact, I've had so many people say, oh, yeah, I've got a great song or this and that, and I'm doing this. And okay, great, let's hear the demos. And as soon as I hear the demos, I'm like, it needs so much work. This is beyond me.
I think you're capable of making Mark and me into pop hit celebrities. Okay. I need a single. Listen, I have to pay for this mortgage somehow.
Look, if there's camp attached to it, we can talk. But if you're trying to be serious about it,
very serious,
you need to go somewhere else.
I'm dead serious. I need
my drag queen personality needs to. I need to come out with a single. All the drag queens are doing it.
So respect.
You know? Daphne Dumont. Yeah.
Double D's. Daphne Dumont. On your knees, Daphne.
No, don't leave, Ralph. Don't leave.
Stay. Listen.
Stay put.
He's not going anywhere. He's not going anywhere. He's handcuffed to the chair.
Yeah.
So what was it like working with Cher?
That
she came into the studio.
Once again, it was no, she didn't actually. The thing with when you're doing remixes, sometimes you get to talk to the artist, and majority of the times I prefer not to. Because the people that are close to her are to me, I get close to them really quick. We're on the same page, and
right.
And
I feel like you and I have that same connection. So in a way, you could engineer my next album.
There you go. See, but
no, yeah.
But
so Cher called you on
okay,
the phone.
So then, like, the company had actually Warner Brothers had called me, and they said were interested in doing something. So I actually brought in my buddy Abel to do some Rosabel versions.
DJ Abel,
yeah, because
yeah, okay.
We do that Rosabel moniker sometimes, and then I do my own thing at the same time. So that it was great. It came out perfect. I hired my co-producer, Craig Snyder, who's also a musician, just to make sure is sounding correct, everything's in key, everything's cool. And then I spend all this time in-house mixing in my own place, my old studio. So when it was all done, she was coming to town. And then the company said, definitely go down and meet her. She's there. She'd love to meet you, whatever. And I wasn't
starstruck. She came on a wheelchair. And
well, no, actually, there was a whole line of there were some other people waiting in the hallway, and my best friend, my best friend Izzy, had clocked Cher's sister sitting outside, and nobody was talking to her because nobody, you know, probably didn't know who she was.
Cher has a sister?
She has a sister. I forgot her
What's
name.
What's her sister's name?
I don't know.
And so they look alike, though?
Sort of. I think she has blonde hair, though. She has blonde hair. But anyway, Izzy had clocked her. Izzy clocked her, and then we went inside, we were waiting, and then the bodyguards kind of waited and then told us to wait. And 2 seconds later, they made an announcement and said, Cher, Ralphie's here, and then she turned around. She said, "That's you. There you are. I knew you were coming. Oh my God, thanks a lot for coming to the show. I hope you really like it." And then I said, "Would you sign my program? You know, I'm thank you for taking the time to say hi to us. Please sign my." She goes, "Oh, no, honey. I got something better for you." She took this big bag with coffee mugs and programs and posters and all this crazy stuff signed. It was just, it was amazing. She's an icon, you know?
Wow. And then she took off all her clothes off and touched you.
And she was like normal size? Because somebody told me she was really short.
She's not
like she
very
was
tiny. She's
two.
Not. She's not okay. tiny. She's, to me, she's medium normal height, I think.
Okay.
Donna Summer.
Oh, my God.
Is this pre-Christianity or post-Christianity when you
worked
with her?
Yeah, because you know this.
Because she came out at one point in time and she's like, "I believe in God and I don't think
she
kind of alienated the gay community."
No, it wasn't about that. It's like the whole interview had, I think, that whole article that happened where she says that gays were going to hell or something. The magazines, you know how these people do that? They twist your words around.
Why don't she just release a new interview and say, "I didn't mean
she did it."
She did.
Many times.
But it was too late.
Well, because nobody cared. Nobody believed it.
Mm. Poor Donna Summer. So she worked hard for the money, but they didn't treat her right.
Right. And then she became a bad girl.
what was the experience like remixing for her?
Okay, know this, that her songwriting skills and her and those songs that came out in the 70s that she did it. Her and JoJo Moroder, because JoJo Moroder is a producer and the whole thing with I Feel Love, Bad Girls, the whole entire Donna Summer thing. Mm-hmm. I looked up to that. That was a huge part of my life as a kid growing up. So I was really inspired by that.
It's a beautiful album.
Well, all of them. Most of them. If you listen front and back, they are gorgeously produced. I mean, you're sitting there listening going, I could not believe they can do this with an orchestra and a brass section. Amazing.
Yeah, the I Feel Love chord progression is
exactly.
really beautiful.
And then there was
great to play on the piano even, just by yourself.
There you go.
And just do the arpeggios and go, you know, C, D, F, G, C, D, F, G. And you're like, oh. Like as a young kid in college, I used to do that, sit and just kind of lose myself in those chords, you know. And that's something about like house music is that unlike disco, it has a quality, shall we say, that allows people to lose themselves.
It's musical.
Or is it the drugs or is it the music?
It's musical.
But it is closely associated with drug use and most specifically...
What? A lot of ecstasy, isn't it? House what music? Is it? Or the party scene?
Not really.
No.
When you say the party scene, it's probably more of what's going on now. If you go to some of the underground house or clubs, yeah, sure, you're probably going to see some drug use or something. But the music is just less, so much less aggressive than what it is. Your toaster's going off. No,
I know. Sorry, those are cell phones vibrating.
Cell phones vibrating. They kind of interfere with the electronics.
Yeah, but so that vibe, that house music vibe, is just a lot vibier. It's just a lot calmer to get into as opposed to all the aggressive tweaks and noise that you might hear in some of the clubs.
But the culture around house music in the 90s was very drug influenced. Maybe not on your end being a DJ,
it was.
But the party scene was definitely everywhere.
It was. It was the birth of that, bringing that in. But when you think about it, the L ecstasy thing and all the major type of vocal records that were out in the 90s, they were really good feel good songs. Mm. A lot of them were.
You worked with Madonna?
Yes, there was for Warner Brothers. Once again, I did Love Profusion, and then before that, I did a Bedtime Story off of the Secret album that she did. I don't remember.
I thought it was the name of the album was Bedtime
Stories. There you go. Yeah. That's what it was.
Did you actually get to work with Madonna?
No. It was more. Once again, you work with the people that work around her, and in this case, she has the last say so about anything. Mm-hmm. So. And then in the case of Love Profusion, that sat around for a while. And then her manager took all the tapes to her, and then she reviewed all the mixes, and then she picked mine and I think three or four other people. So that was interesting.
Let's talk about the qualities of the house beat. Because a disco beat, the way I understand it, is just simple. It's the downbeat accentuated by hi-hat with the kick drum. Giving us the snap. So it's
right.
What is the quality of the house beat? It's on the four.
It's basically universal. If you look at it that way, disco graduated itself into so-called dance music in the early 80s, mm-hmm. and also giving its birth to house in the late 70s, but that's still unsa, unsa, unsa kind of situation sure. is there now. It's so, the basic so, foundation of a 4-4 kick drum and 4-4 time with a clap going on in every other beat.
So is house just disco by a different name?
House basically has more soul to it. Mm-hmm. It has more of a feel. I know you guys know what I'm talking about.
Well, I'm trying to, because to me, the way I remember house music or identify it is that I always hear the bass drum sounds like somebody knocking on a door. No. So it's like...
Well, that's what happens with electro still, even now, even what's going on now, you still get 4-4. But when you think about it, house music is just more vibey. It's got more of a feel. There's a song attached, just like...
And it's almost like with disco, it's a lot of times it is very... Exactly. It's a simplicity to...
But it's very musical. Mm-hmm. That's what I really love. Like, I spend a lot of time listening to a lot of chill-out instrumentals and a lot of deep house stuff. And it's just more melodic. It just feels so airy and so light and beautiful. That's what that is.
Now, well, let's listen to one of your actual songs that you're best known for. You Used to Hold Me.
Yes.
This was recorded back when?
In 1987.
1987, featuring
Zevaria Gold.
Zevaria Gold.
For you both.
Yes.
Did you guys ever hear this when you went out at all?
I heard music that sounded like this. It doesn't pop into my head.
Yeah, see? A lot of people don't know this either.
Hold on. We're hearing this.
That's why I was asking about the drugs.
Work it. So you could just throw in like some words into it. I'm a house diva. On your knees.
And that's exactly what they're doing now.
That is You Used to Hold Me.
You Used to Hold Me.
What is the story behind that song?
Miss Zevaria Gold was in love with a fireman.
She's the woman who's singing in this track.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, she was very, very young. She said she wanted to be a DJ. I'm like, you're not going to be a DJ. You're going to be a singer.
And she fell in love with a fireman.
She fell in love with a fireman, and she was telling me about it. Oh, I don't know what to do about this guy. I really love him, blah, 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 you know, and I think... You know, I'm not sure, but I think he's interested in me being long-term, that kind of thing. And then she sat down and wrote a few things, and we collaborated, we sat down and finished the whole thing up, and she started singing about him. I'm like, okay. Once again, a story's being told.
Okay.
Used to hold me.
What is up with these, like, divas? Like, you never hear a lot of male vocals in this type of genre. Because
they're not very good.
Is that what it is?
Or they have auto-tune on them once again.
So, like, T-Pain is sort of bringing the men back into this?
I don't listen to any of that stuff.
Well, because are they not doing the right kind of soul, is it?
I just don't listen to it. It just detours me. Mm-hmm. I cringe. It's some girl singing a really bad note. It mm-hmm. just does that to me.
It's mostly gay men engineers and heterosexual female singers.
Well, that's another
combined thing.
Gay men singers. They scare me, too, a little bit.
What is it about the gay male singer?
I don't know.
Is it the quality of the sound?
The songs. Lift Me Up, Take Me Higher, It's Been Used Before kind of thing. I Think I Love You kind of, it's just been done.
What's your thoughts on, like, Erasure?
It's serious. It's serious. Yeah. It's well thought. That's what I love. It's a thought. It's not like, oh my God, I so have to plaster myself so I can do every circuit party around the country.
I mean, what has Andy Bell's career gotten to now, though?
You know, I think the last time I remember going on some of the Atlantis cruises and he was a guest on there singing a few songs.
He's kind of like becoming like a cabaret diva.
Yeah,
now.
I think so. Yeah.
What happened? I was like, I want to go. If I got to see him, I was like, what happened to you, man? You used to be cool.
Now, would you actually walk up and ask him that?
I wouldn't say that. Well, I've said worse things to Greg Louganis, but that's a whole nother story. But no, I mean, with Andy Bell, it's like, you know, he used to like be the gay man in popular music, you know, with Erasure. And I mean, everybody.
Well,
loves
once again, when you
songs.
Think about it, you think about not only him, but it was a tour de France for the whole Vince Clark thing, because he was a producer also in the second part of Erasure. And that's always been a big factor of that, you know. Those hook lines and all those songs, even going back to Yaz and Alison Moyet, that could have been Erasure. It was the same person.
I've been working out at the gym.
Yeah.
I got nice pecs.
Yeah.
I got my tank top. Yeah. I got my iPod full of Christine W. songs.
Right.
How do I become a celebrity DJ like you?
You do what a lot of other people I've seen doing. Are you ready for this one?
Yes.
Okay. You got your pecs on, right?
I got my pecs. They amplify the sound.
Yeah, they amplify the sound. The pecs amplify the sound. That's what you said, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You got your washboard apps. You can play your spoons on them when you want to.
But it's like, I mean, it just seems that there's a lot of people going by as celebrity DJs. But you said anybody can do it.
I call it the DJ in a box. It's like, it's just, for me, it's just like, oh, I can do it too kind of thing. Oh, I'm going to give it a shot because I'm going to be a superstar DJ one day. It's just that that's not it.
But Foster, you actually were a DJ in a box at one point.
I was a DJ in a box. I worked for the wedding company and I used to go out to the suburbs.
I don't really call that DJ in a box. That's not DJ in a box. That's just
I felt catering. It was an art form.
There you go. It was an art form. But now it's just like, I think you can pick up the whole DJ kit at Walmart or Kmart for $9.99 and just go home and practice. And all of a sudden, you're the life of the party.
Well, does it get hot up in that DJ booth? Because they're always shirtless.
Well, you know...
Except for Samantha Ronson.
I myself have never done that.
She gets shirtless.
I've actually played in front of 3,000 plus people at a few times. And yes, it does get hot up there. The set is long. But, I mean, the energy is just incredible.
This might be a very obvious question, and I'm going to get booed by the listeners. So be prepared here.
Uh-oh.
Why not just record all the stuff and hit play on the button and sit back and drink your iced tea?
There are DJs that do that
and pretend like they're doing it.
Yes,
but why? But what's the
name
value in engineering the music live and in front of an audience?
Because they can hear the difference.
And what is the difference?
The difference is I'm applying what I'm doing. I'm actually bringing more stuff to my performance in terms of either I'm doing mashups or I'm remixing or stuff that's unreleased, or I'm writing something over something else. And I've had people run upstairs going, what is that song? And it's like, it's not a song. It's something that we've done. Like even myself and Abel doing as a team together, something we did right on the spot.
So would you want to record a lot of these things and release them as albums?
No.
Why not?
Because there's a lot of legalities involved in it. I mean, your copyright and publishing kind of things, especially if I have an a cappella of a Donna Summer song and I'm playing it over something else that belongs to some guy in Spain. You know what I mean? It's just
so the value of remixing in front of an audience is that it allows you to use anything and everything to make the perfect
to
song.
To be totally creative. It's just not turning on your computer and then playing one song and go right into the next. We're just actually parading and doing a lot of stuff to it.
So you're improvising, but are you kind of planning ahead? Do you already know?
No.
You're like, oh, I'm going to play this and then you're going to play, that and we'll get that together.
No,
or it's like,
I mean,
oh, let's just do this right now.
Well, it's more like, let's just do this right now. We go with exactly what we're feeling at the moment. That's what works. We don't pre-program anything.
We're going to take some questions here from Facebook from the listeners. Joe Van Taylingen, I love it when you spin at Alegria.
Yes.
What is Alegria?
Alegria is basically it's a party that happens in New York, usually every holiday, Sunday that happens. And Alegria is it's just a different caliber of music altogether. And it's more, I mean, it's, yes, it's gay, but it's more male dominated than anything. And it's, I think the ethnicity we want to talk about actually brings a lot of Brazilian / Spanish New Yorker men or boys that come out.
Mm.
And
well, if Joe's there, there's got to be some black men there.
Well, yeah. I mean, there's a little bit of everything, but it's more, you got more of an ethnic, like Latin kind of base there that's really strong. And the party is just, to me, it's something that New York has been missing for a while now, you know?
Ty Curtis saying, I love your music. I love all the things that you've contributed.
Thank you.
Kate Webb Ewing, what do you think about the RIAA, the Record Industry Association of America?
Which basically is something I wanted to talk about with the music rights now kind of thing. I've been kind of giving everybody to sign off on this and fill out this form because basically what I'm trying to do is have, along with other people, just to protect our rights as musicians, producers, writers, that kind of thing, when it comes to piracy on the internet. I mean, all the file sharing sites are just basically ripping millions and millions of dollars away from all these either struggling musicians or singers or record companies as it is now.
But it seems like the RIAA is more interested in suing people to benefit itself as a organization and not really protecting the financial interests of content creators. To the point that a lot of people are actually quitting their record labels and releasing their music free as the wind, mm-hmm. and trying to make their money from playing concerts or from playing merchandise sales or doing it.
That's where most of the indie stuff has happened. But still, when you're doing the independent stuff, you're just as susceptible as everybody else getting ripped off on the internet. We need some kind of protection. I think Europe has it, China has it, and a whole bunch of other countries have it where we're all protected. Here, we don't have that.
And why do you think that's different there?
I don't know. It's just part of that whole... I mean,
well, how is Europe protecting musicians?
Well, I mean, I think that piracy thing that's going on with them is that they're really serious and they're cracking down on all these time-sharing sites that are going around. And there's so many of them. I mean, I think that Brazil, it probably has so many of them. I hear from people all the time about, oh, your stuff is out here, it's here, it's here. And it's like, it hasn't even been out there for a whole week, but people are already taking it. Mm. They're not buying it. They're taking it.
Right.
That's what the difference is.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you got to pay the rent.
Well, everybody does.
Yeah.
You know?
And it's not just you, it's the people that you employ to help you, and so it's...
Look, I want to make some totones next week, okay? I can't make it if people are stealing my stuff.
Well, obviously file sharing has impacted you and your career as a music creator.
Everybody, actually, a lot of producers.
So, where are you making your money from now?
A lot of it, actually, it's a lot, because I dabble in a lot of things. I mean, sure. I also DJ shows around the country, even outside the country as well. Mm-hmm. So the means of support comes from a lot of different types. I mean, I myself still have, I mean, when you're dealing with my old catalog as well, I still see all my residuals. I mean, did you guys actually know, a lot of people don't know this either. I did music for Sex and the City when the show was actually working.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. There were spots. We've had like minute spots, 30-second spots, 60-second spots of music. And these are some of them are club tracks, some of them are instrumental laid back kind of things. These are things that are actually part of that.
So Jessica Parker is still paying you?
Actually, I'd say HBO and the rest of the whole clan are still paying. So
girl,
I mean, but you get to see
only.
That. Well, see, but you get to see that mm-hmm. this is just a part of who I am. Mm-hmm. You see, DJing and making remixes and stuff is a great passion, but it also extends it to many different other things around me. I just love creating music. And for people to steal it really gets my goat.
Do you play any instruments yourself?
I play a little bit of keys. I'm not a fanatic with it. I used to play trombone in high school. I used to be in a jazz band. So I know the value of those notes and music and stuff like that. But I've been more of an engineer, more that way, more of an electronic musician that I can actually put. I'm really good about. My ears have never failed me.
And what is your favorite way to record an engineer? Are you like are you a Pro Tools guy, Logic Audio?
I'm a Pro Tools HD guy.
Really?
Yes.
And you have what interface do you use? And people are like, what is this?
Three thing? Of them.
What interface are you using?
I have two 96Is and then I have a 96IO.
See, the problem with these large
and
complex...
I like your little old M-Box you got back there.
Girl,
it's kind of fierce.
M-Box still
from 1967
works. You know,
I have one of those. I gave one to a friend of mine. It's really, really good. I always believed in their products. I think they've been great for anybody listening from Digi or Avid.
Oh, they're not going to send me a thing.
They're
so cheap.
What are you on Pro Tools there too, right?
We're recording this show on Pro Tools. The thing that drives me crazy, and I've said this to the people that run Pro Tools to their faces. I said, your technology has not really significantly been upgraded in the last 10 years. You may have thrown this or little bell or whistle. But
what do you want out of it?
I want faster than real-time rendering. Can I get an amen?
Amen.
Hello. You know?
Yeah.
Because for as long as this show takes to record, that's how long it takes to render before we can upload
it. And I'm like, every other audio editing suite out there in the world goes faster in real time.
But then why do you still use it then?
Because I don't have to spend money to buy a new one.
See? Mm-hmm.
What it's a legacy issue.
Well, it's a legacy issue. You know, it's like at the time when we started podcasting.
How fast is that laptop you have in front of
it's
you?
It's a very fast laptop.
What is it? Is it an Intel?
Processor speed. Is it's it an Intel? Intel okay. Power. We're going to talk about technology
no,
here.
No, no, no. I have the same laptop. So
2.6 gigahertz Intel yeah. Core yes. 2 Duo. Yeah,
I have the same machine.
And if I were running this on Logic, which is a goal of me actually to abandon Pro Tools because I get no love from DigiDesign. And
welcome to the anti-Digi section.
I
of
am
the show.
Really yeah. It's like bash DigiDesign. And I have to say, it's like, what are you guys waiting for? Because people are leaving Pro Tools to go to other audio production suites. Well, like Logic because it gives them everything.
I like the fact you that know? A lot of trained engineers, musicians are still using Pro Tools.
But that's
they've
legacy.
Come from the tape days.
Yeah.
Okay. And they trust Pro Tools. When I get a session, like just recently I did a Christina Aguilera thing. I get a session from them. I'm getting the full recording of what's going on. I get to hear everything. And the cool thing about it is that in my industry, the language is so universal when it comes to Pro Tools. When they're sending me multis or stems on stuff, it's so easy to open and work on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean at that level. But if you're doing something else, you know, and it's going to work so
and
much
somebody,
cheaper
somebody
for you.
Like him, you're not rendering anything until you're at the end.
Well, I'm still doing it. I'm working with audio mm-hmm. all the time.
But it's going to be a 4-minute song, and I think like Pro Tools.
No. It's going to be a 7 or 8 minute song,
or even seven or
well,
eight
like,
minutes.
We're dealing with 40 minutes to
40
an hour.
Minutes
that's
to an
why,
hour.
That's why I think
and they're
that
trying
maybe
to pass Pro Tools as a film soundtrack engineering program, and I'm like,
well, that's
I'm
what
sorry.
They're talking about the higher end stuff.
You know, yeah. And it's like, look, you know, with Logic Audio, you don't need to spend $5,000 to get yourself an audio editing suite to engineer a film.
That's another reason why HD does work for me is because HD, and we'll just jump on something else after this.
Yeah.
HD, for me, it just the quality of sound coming out of those cards has been amazing.
Well, and so Mackie has come out with their own independent audio interfaces, the AUX ones. Mm-hmm. Have you ever gotten a chance to work with those at all?
No, I almost bought one, but I had a Mackie 32x8 board that I was mm-hmm. actually recording on all the time. When I started using Pro Tools HD, I realized that I really didn't need that board anymore. I mean, because basically back as far as early as the early 90s and mid all the way through now, I was using this board and I was separating all these instruments and recording all my final mixes to a DAT.
Wow.
You
know,
yeah. Mark's
you
like,
guys
what?
Got me caught up in Mark, technology.
Yeah,
sorry.
Sorry
to make that
no,
so long,
right.
But you know,
it's
you
okay.
took me on a whirlwind, Mr. Mack.
Girl, I was asking you as Carol Channing says, we asked the very penetrating questions.
Penetrating.
Yes, without
baby.
Any lube. Ryan Scott Justice, how did you get started as a DJ? Any embarrassing wedding DJ stories in your history?
Of course. Once again, starting, my brother's band needed a DJ to play their rest sets pretty much. So I went in, I had two Zenith Allegro players plugged into their mixing console that the band had. And for a pitch control, I would use toilet paper.
How would you use toilet paper for pitch control?
Because I would put it in. I was so weird with it. I would put it in perfect. It would slow it down just perfect because it would add a little bit of pressure.
You put it into where?
To the back of the turntable.
Oh, to slow down,
to slow it down a little bit.
Spinning of the
right.
plate.
Oh.
Pablo Beltran Salva, did you see house music and electronic music going in terms of the mainstream music scene? Did you really see it become what it is today?
Yes, I did.
And why? Why did you think that it had a future? Why did it have legs?
Because the form of house music back in the day, it had a lot more movement to it as far as the energy, the club drive, whatever it is. But the songs were there. And that was one of the most important things to me.
Now, why do they call it house music? Because I read a little things on the internet. Some things people say, oh, it's because of the warehouse. Some people say it's because the music we played in our house. But
no,
why the name house?
It's because it was, like I said, it was a lot of soul in this mm-hmm. type of music, and there still is. I mean,
why don't they
some
call
of the
it
house
soul?
That's out. Well, <it's>, I mean, you know, pretty much it is called soul music.
Okay.
You know,
mm-hmm.
but it just had a lot more. It had for me, it had a lot more feeling to it. It just had a lot more soul, right? Mm-hmm. vibe, and the lyrics were totally there.
Were you calling it? But were you calling it house music when you were making it, or did you call it something else?
No, it just, you know what? It was just the whole thing. I think that must have happened in the days of Frankie Knuckles when he was at the warehouse here in Chicago, and it basically became this moniker. That's what it was called. House music was basically...
So the audience was saying, place more house music beats. But where did the name come from? Did people associate it with a name of a club, or did they
No, it became a style of music is what it was. It was classified
as... So it is like house salad dressing is also synonymous. House salad dressing is synonymous with Italian dressing. Because,
but we're not talking about Italian dressing.
But the concept here in the name is similar, is that they saw it as the music that belongs to the house.
Right.
The house being the
warehouse, pretty much. And this warehouse basically played this type of music.
That was the name of a club, the warehouse.
The warehouse.
Okay.
And if I may stop you for a second, today is officially Frankie Knuckles Day. Because they had actually put a street sign up.
Respect to Frankie Knuckles.
And they put a street sign up. And Frankie basically, they have a street sign over there by the old power plant, which is basically on Chicago and Halsted.
Right on. Yeah, that was a big club in the day.
Yeah,
right?
It's a factory now, I think, but it was a club. I remember going there.
Oh, it went from a factory to a club, back to a factory?
Yeah, pretty
much. Frankie Knuckles? I'm trying to find his real name, though. I mean, is his last family, he comes from the Knuckles family, or?
Von Knuckles.
Von Knuckles. Les Knuckles.
What is his real, I'm like, does anybody know?
I think he's just famous for his being that, right?
Exactly.
But I mean, I'm looking here on Wikipedia, because a lot of the artists go into their Wikipedia entries and they take out their birth name, you know. They're like, I don't want to be known as anything other than Frankie Von Knuckles
or Herman Schmidt Lab.
That's his birth name. We also got a question, Edgardo Arazola Macasaya. What is this dumb question?
What is the history of house music? This is going to take more
generic
than 5 minutes, honey.
Terrible question, Edgardo.
Google
it, baby. Where do you see all this stuff going, though? I mean, are you going to continue making music, or do you want to, like, retire in some nice...
No, I still want to make music. I still love doing remixes. I'm picking and choosing the battles, pretty much. I'm at the point right now where I like to pick and choose what I want to work on. And coinciding with that, I actually have the label that I just introduced last month, Cha-Cha Boom Recordings.
Cha-Cha Boom. That's perfect for us.
Cha-Cha Boom Recordings.
Can we be on your label?
That's perfect for us.
If you... I got to
sign.
You
know,
when
I see the maracas in the corner over there, you're going to be just perfect. But anyway...
If you could read my mind.
Cha-Cha Boom Recordings is basically the outlet that I have to be more of myself and be a little bit more creative and just get as crazy as I want to be.
So are you looking for artists to work with? What are you
looking
for?
No, I'm not.
So you're seeking artists out?
No, I'm not.
No, so you're making your own music.
I'm making my own stuff.
So under your own label,
My own label.
Are you going to be singing?
No.
So you're just going to be taking samples?
There could be
things,
some spoken word things here and there, some kind of weird things, but it's all about the rawness of the production, especially in the club level.
And how soon before you release anything?
It's already been out.
Oh, it's already out.
Yeah. Could someone technically remix this show into a song beat?
You would be surprised.
They could remix this show. I want the listeners
if they can steal music the way they've been stealing it.
It's not free. This is released on Creative Commons. So you can do whatever you want to with it. You just can't. If you're gonna make money, gotta give us a cut, honey.
Right.
And and make sure you give credit. That you could use DJ, you know, here, Ralphie Rosario, use his vocals. Can you sing a little bit for us?
No.
Oh, so you could take the no and remix it and be like, no.
Yeah.
And you could make a song and then you could say with DJ Ralphie Rosario as backup vocals.
Unbelievable.
You could do it.
Yeah. Believe me, the way technology is, you can steal anything these days.
It's not stealing, it's cooperation.
Well, I call it stealing sometimes.
Well,
cooperation would be when somebody would take this, make a track out of it, contact you and say, hey, we got this thing that we're working on. We really want to put it out. Here's a deal memo.
That
doesn't happen that way.
But it would be nice if they did.
These people will take it, remix it, do something crazy, chip chop it, put it everywhere, put it on the file sharing sites, put it on their Facebook page,
yeah,
okay, and say it's something that they did on their own.
Well, I encourage people to do it because they took that much time and energy to remix my voice.
Maybe you should sing and somebody
should. I want to.
You'll sing right now.
I'm doing it. Hey, can you feel it? I can feel it. Hold on. I got another one for you. Music feeds the groove and the audience is hungry. Okay, ready? Music feeds the groove and the audience is hungry.
Yeah.
Okay, remix that and then we got a hit song.
Ralphie, who are you looking forward to working with? Or what divas are out there that you're like, I want to remix this bitch?
Oh my God. No, nobody actually noteworthy right now that I could say. I think I've worked with so many people that I never thought in a million years I'd be touching. I'd never hear their vocals, especially like Neil Tennant from the Pet Shop Boys. Mm. I never thought in a million years that I would be hearing his vocal through my studio monitors in my room.
Are you Gaga for Lady Gaga?
Wow, he's not.
Not so much
Uh-oh.
Anymore.
Does she need to put out a house album?
No, you know, it's just, I respect her so much. She's a musician.
But
I just think it's just overkill.
Because her music is played so much.
Well, she didn't need to be doing a Beyonce thing. She didn't need to be doing all these, you know, get together with all these people that she, you know what I mean? I mean, you do that later.
but it sounds really good.
No, but I love everything she's done. I love all the songs that she's put out. I think she's amazing.
Do you think that it's possible to make any new music now that Lady Gaga exists?
Well, now, you know what? Here it is. Now they need to step up because basically she took exactly what's been going on forever. The whole trend of electronic music and actually putting some serious lyrics to it.
A good song and a good melody.
You're right. Where is that in most of the things that's out there? It's all run by this computer, and that computer can generate so much. But if you're not seriously writing a good song, it's not worth a damn. Seriously.
Skynet may make hunky robots, but their music sucks.
Don't trust the computer.
Don't trust the computer. Yeah. We're going to leave you here with it's a pleasure having you on the show, Ralphie Rosario.
I thought this was a lot of fun.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I'm always a lot of fun.
You're welcome back anytime, Ralphie.
We'll spoon afterwards.
You can find you at RalphieRosario.com.
Yes, and at the same time, look for Chacha Boom Recordings, and right now it's solely on Masterbeat.com right now.
With a Feast of Fun single hot mix, Daphne Dumont, coming soon to you. You actually sent us another song.
Well, actually, I did a cool little old school mix for some of the people that might want to hear some classic stuff that was on the radio back in the day. It starts off with a group called Spark, and it's called Let's Go Dancing. And basically, Spark was on a label called West End out of New York City, and this was a really big house record back in 81, I believe, 82.
And there's people already at the party. I can hear them.
Yeah, see, wow. I mean, it was just amazing. When you heard this on a major sound system in New York, especially at the garage, you would just go insane.
Yo, Vinny, pass the Dutchie on the left-hand side. Ralphie, amazing. It's a pleasure.
Bye. Pleasure is all mine.
Remember, folks, you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/feastoffun, for up-to-the-minute news and fabulousness. Also, check out our site, feastoffun.com. It's not just a podcast. It's a whole explosion of blogging fabulousness.
And we're also on Facebook, so look for us there at facebook.com/feastoffun.
What a second! We're also on YouTube! YouTube.com/... My grandmother's champ. No, it's youtube.com/feastoffun. I'm Fausto Fernos.
I'm Mark Filliam.
Bye, everybody. Bye-bye.
let's get it straight. Can't be running, shooting, gunning, hustling. Gotta beat the street. Yeah. Once upon a time, I had a dream.
Beat the street, beat the street.
We made it through the hardest times. I heard my mind scream. Gotta beat the street, you gotta beat the street.
Beat the street, beat the street. Beat the street, beat the street.
Gotta beat the street, you gotta beat the street.
Beat the street, beat the street. Beat the street, beat the street.
you for many years. I know every inch of your body. I know the things that really turn you on, and I don't want to ever be without me. I can see it in your eyes, thinking of someone else. I can feel it in your touch, you're only fooling yourself. You can't fake it. You can't fake the feeling without feeling. Don't give me a love if you really don't mean it. You know I know you, baby, inside out. And I've been good to you, and honey, there's no doubt. But there's one thing that I can't do without, and honey, that is my love. I can see it in your eyes, you're thinking of someone else. You can't deny. Oh, come on, baby, don't you ever tell no lies. But there's one thing that you can't do without, and baby, that is my love. I can see it in your eyes, thinking of someone else. I can feel it in your touch, you're only fooling yourself. We'll be right back.
It's gonna be a lovely day for you and me. Just wait and see. It's gonna be a lovely day for you and me. Just wait and see.
So closely, I can feel your face.